This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special.
Welcome to Supernatural Circumstances, the podcast where we take you down the rabbit hole into the fantastic and fascinating world of the strange, the paranormal, and the unknown. Ooh. I'm Morgan Knutson.
And I'm Mike Brown. It's time to dim the lights and settle in. Come along with us on this week's adventure. And we're going south this week.
Way south.
Yeah.
Way south, all the way to Alabama.
Alabama. Yeah, I'm looking forward to traveling to Alabama. I've never been to Alabama.
I have not been to Alabama either. I've actually not visited the southern states.
Oh, wow. You have to. The food is amazing and the people are so friendly.
Our guest today, I mean, she is from Alabama and is one of my favorite people in the world, as I've told Crystal a million times, Crystal Anthony. And she is amazing because she is both a bit of a medium herself and an attorney and kind of a historian, because she has lived everywhere. She's rebuilt homes, and she ended up in a house that this story bears repeating.
Mm.
It's so fascinating because so many of the times when we're listening to all of these people talk about their stories, their horrifying encounters, and what gets missed is the plethora of positive things and positive connections that people have made with spirits, and how far that positivity and that interconnectedness mm-hmm. can go, including saving your life.
Cool. Well, I'm really looking forward to talking to Crystal about this, because I've read a little bit about the timeline of what happened in their home, and it's like really, really fascinating. And it really dives into, like you said, how an entity, whatever it is that's happening in that particular home at that particular time, was actually really helpful to them.
So helpful. And at one point, even saving their kids' lives a couple of times, and hers. And it's amazing because the energy, and we'll talk about this with Crystal, but the energy in which they bring into the space and the openness and connectedness that they had with that relationship with non-physical, with spirit, really does lend and show its value in Crystal's story. And I think that's why this is so important to talk about. This is something that every single person can do and have a relationship with, and it's really special.
Well, awesome. Let's get to it then.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Look, Bumble knows you're exhausted by dating. All the, must not take yourself too seriously, and 6-1 since that matters, and what do I even say other than, hey? Well, that's why they're introducing an all-new Bumble, with exciting features to make compatibility easier, starting the chat better, and dating safer. They've changed, so you don't have to. Download the new Bumble now.
I'm thrilled today because somebody who I consider my big sister is our guest today. And Mike, I've been really looking forward to introducing you to her because she's one of my favorite people in the world. And Crystal, how long have we known each other? 2006, I think. It's been a while. So yeah, Crystal, it's so good to have you here, first of all. We connected years ago over when I was on a haunting back on Discovery Channel in the early 2000s. And I mean, you've had some incredible experiences that you've shared with me over the years. And I really wanted to feature some of what you have experienced on the show, because I think so often we get wrapped up in these stories that are terrifying and frightening. And of course, the TV shows are always kind of peddling that angle. And, you know, it's exciting and whatnot. But the positive stuff can be so inspiring and also really exciting. And this is what I love. And we talk about this all the time. Tell everybody a little bit about you, because you've got a really interesting background. You know, you've been to law school and you're a bit of a medium, too.
Yes. And as far back as I can remember, I have been. I've come from a very spiritual family. Like the majority of my family, I'm not super religious. They're very religious. But these kind of things with them went hand in hand, because for some people who are not familiar with this particular denomination, we have a lot of Pentecostal people in our family. And that's one thing that spiritualism, you know, being very spiritual, and actually the ability to, you know, converse or discern spirits is one gift that, you know, they consider to actually be a good gift. And my great grandmother had this. She was very, 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 very much a medium. And she would actually just outright see that, like, it was physical, see things, she felt things. We connected. She's one of my best friends, and it's unusual to have, you know, a great grandmother in your life as long as I did, but yeah, I had her in my life till I was 16. I think early on, she realized I had this too. There was an incident at my grandmother's house where we both saw the same thing. I'd gotten up in the middle of the night to go to the bathroom or get a drink of water, whatever, you know, I was a kid. And it was down at the end of the hall. I thought I'd see a woman, and I thought this was, you know, could possibly be my grandmother, my mother. But as I got closer, I realized, no, this is not. And it wasn't a woman, like, you know, not like a human woman. And that was the interesting thing. I was upset. I yelled. I do believe it scared me. And the first thing I can remember is my great-grandmother coming out, and she was talking to me. And, you know, of course, everyone else assures me there's nothing there. And then when we go back, my great-grandmother's like, I see her too. And she said, you have this, and you have this gift. And she said, it's different for everybody. It's never, she goes, it's often not the same. And she was great, you know, to educate me that way. As far as like myself, she was very much clairvoyant. Like when I talk to people about this and try to explain it, I talk to them because, you know, they get this thing on TV. It's like, oh, so you can predict this. And it's no.
There's so many misconceptions. Yeah,
there are. And, you know, like you basically, you know, you have mediumship and you have your psychic senses, because, you know, medium can have psychic abilities, but not all psychics are mediums. Not all mediums
sure.
are psychic.
Mm-hmm. That's a really good clarification actually to make, like between clairvoyance, clairaudience, you know, some people that are having ESP experiences. I mean, all of that. Yeah, it is very, very different for everyone.
Yes, you're reading my mind. I'm telling you, this is another thing that Morgan and I have this connection with that is really interesting, because I was about to mention that, because mine tends to fall more into the clairsentient side where I sense things. You know, it's basically I get an impression of something, or, you know, claircognizance where I'm actually, I get these little things where I'm like, okay, this isn't right. There's something going on here. My clairvoyance is more like, I don't know, it's almost like seeing something through a veil. Like I get this mental picture. It's not as clear as, say, my great-grandmother's was. But as far as like my sensing things and all of that, yeah. I tell my husband, I'm like, I promise you, if I say something is up, we need to figure out what this is.
Yeah, and it's true. And you've been so accurate. Like even with stuff with me over the years, stuff, you know, that hasn't even hit my radar. And you've come to me and said, you know, something's off. And lo and behold, within a very short amount of time, or something really positive has happened, and within a very short amount of time, bam, it's like it becomes really clear. And it's pretty cool. It's really cool.
And those that are really close to me, it's happened to you, but you and I especially, there's definitely something there. But yeah, I've actually seen some things that have scared me. I have seen things that have absolutely, I've just been thrilled to see. There's, you know, it's all different levels, good, bad, ugly, but for the most part, it's good. I mean, I really view it as a positive thing. I think that's largely because this is an actual gift, and I think that's how it should be approached for the most part.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like you and I have talked about that so much.
Yeah.
So many of these experiences are positive.
Yep, totally. I have people in my life, too, who I just seem to have this odd connection with. I mean, Morgan, you and I felt that immediately.
Absolutely.
When we first met. So yeah, like the supernatural doesn't always have to be this horrifying, scary thing.
No, not at all. And that's what I am so looking forward to talking about today with this, because in 2011, Crystal, you and your lovely husband, Jason, who is an amazing human being, you guys decided to go house shopping and ended up in a very interesting neighborhood and had some experiences with a house that bears repeating, because I think this is, I've got goosebumps right now just talking about this. Can you talk about, first of all, this neighborhood, like set the stage so people can imagine what this looks like?
Well, it's really cool because the city that I lived in at that time, Decatur, it had two separate historic districts, but there was a reason there were two separate historic districts. Back during the Civil War, during the Battle of Decatur, all but around three or four buildings were burned. So there wasn't much left. And then, you know, with everything going by the river, Decatur was this big shipping port. And so then there was a yellow fever epidemic that came through right during Reconstruction, right after the Civil War, that dwindled the population down less than half of, you know, what it was. So there were some developers and they bought some land that about 5,000 acres just right off of Decatur, and they called it New Decatur. But people in Decatur didn't really like that, and it was causing some rivalry, so they named it Albany after Albany, New York, and advertised it as being the Chicago of the South. So with everything starting anew, it's really cool. The neighborhood, and I think one reason that we and a lot of people are drawn there, it's because of just the diversity, even architecturally, everything. And it's just a really cool place. It's nothing to go down the street, see this gorgeous Victorian house right next to, you know, an American Four Square, and then right next to a Gothic cottage. And then you have, ours was a Dutch colonial, had Dutch colonials, Georgian Revival, everything. So it's like no house is the same. Either one of those areas, no two houses are generally the same at all.
I love those neighborhoods.
They combined them in the 20s. And actually, before our house was built on that street, it was kind of the new kid on the block because it was completed in the 40s. But before that, it was a Victory Garden during World War II, which is where the community would go and they would, you know, have these gardens that everybody tended to. And that kind of helped with rationing. So everybody had plenty to eat, you know, ideally. But Jason was the one who first found the house. We had not married by then. We were just boyfriend and girlfriend. But we were super excited moving in, too, because this is a, you know, we both loved history. We both loved the area. When he said, "What do you think about this district?" It was like, oh, I love that.
Well, you just touched on something I think is so key to the story, which is that when you guys saw the house, you kind of knew it was yours. Like it was how so many people, because I mean, we've heard this so many times where people, you know, they go into a home and they're like, oh, you know, something's off, something doesn't feel right. This was totally the opposite for you guys. You were like, this is us. This is our home. This is alignment. This feels good.
I've had exactly the same experience when my ex-wife and I bought a townhouse. I had dreamt months before about moving into a house with a large gold number 12 on the door. And we had looked at a whole bunch of other places and we pulled into the driveway of this newest place. And there it was, this gold number 12 on the door. And I was like, no way. And we walked inside and Carol looked around. And she said, this is our home.
Oh, wow.
Instantly. And that's the place we bought. So yeah, I've had exactly that same experience.
Wow.
I had not even seen the inside of the house. He called me. I was working and he said, well, I went and looked at a house today and it's almost like walking back in time. It's been kept, like, since it was built. And, you know, when, as soon as we pulled up, I mean, he sends me a picture. I'm like, that's it. And we pulled up. I'm like, this is it. This is it.
Mm-hmm.
Oddly enough, it had, it was two streets over. I have no clue why, but ended up having a house. I wouldn't go no further than the second room. And I'm like, nope. Something's off. Going back to the whole, you know, Claire sentence thing. It's like, yeah, something's off. And this is not it. But this home, no, it was the, I think the only thing, and it was funny, because I can remember peeking in the window because the real estate agent had not let us in to look at it yet. And I had one little feeling there that was kind of like, what are you doing? And I kind of back up. Like, you know, if I walk by my house and somebody's peeking in my window, I'd be like, okay, what are you doing? And I had that briefly. I think that falls into, you know, what happens after that. Because when we went inside, it was immediate. It felt like home. Like, it was just very welcoming, very warm feeling. And other people we had over during the time we lived there would say the same thing. It just feels like home here.
And the house was personalized. Like, it had this, this was really interesting to me too, is that you guys discovered that there was, like, carved names, like there's hidden Easter eggs in this house.
There were, the first thing that my husband noticed, and he pointed it out to me, there were the hand and feet prints of little girls that were raised in the house. And at that point, you know, and their names and hands and feet prints were actually in the concrete and the carport, which we both loved, you know. Having two small children ourselves at that time, this was great. And the door knocker still had the family's name on it. And we just opted to leave the name on the door knocker. We just thought that was cool. That just added to the historical, you know, charm of the home.
Sure. Yeah. And well, and Jason at this point too, we should mention, was a absolute skeptic. This was kind of, this is the journey of somebody who was not necessarily like a militant skeptic by any by any stretch, but somebody who, like, was pretty on the fence about, you know, what was going on. Like, he's a very fact-finding guy, Mike. Like, he, you know, he's got to have all the pieces and it's got to be very logical.
This sounds like my brain, so.
Very much. Yes, yeah. Very much. A little bit more so, though, I would say.
Yes. Very much. There are so many funny stories about him, like it, you know. And it also had not come up about, you know, his girlfriend's little deal with the supernatural, because nothing had come up at that point for me to even bring it up. I mean, it just was like, okay, it's fine. I mean, he had put up with me and my little, I don't feel so good about this. And then finally just, you know, being very specifically why I don't feel good about this, you know, that kind of thing. But other than that, yes. But now he has to have all the, like you said, all the moving parts, and has to look at things. And, you know, at that time, there were a lot of repairs that needed to be done to the house. He was more focused on that. We were thrilled. I mean, that was one thing I really think was important going into this whole story, is just happy going in. We were excited. We had been piling up in this little tiny apartment, and we were ready to go in there, get repairs done. And, you know, for at least a month or two, we were still staying in this little apartment, and he would stay overnight. Sometimes he took, because I was in law school at the time, I was studying a lot. And then, you know, we had two little kids and getting them ready for bed, all that kind of stuff, eating dinner. Then he would go and work on the house. And that's when things kind of really started to happen, kind of get the ball rolling, so to speak.
Yeah. Well, and you guys began remodeling the house. Like, you moved in and you guys were going to, you know, and this is, I think, so classic as to how many of these, how these stories kind of start, where, you know, stuff starts to get changed and shifted. And, but you hadn't actually moved in yet. You were, like, you were kind of remodeling from a distance. What was the first thing that you guys noticed?
Well, I was studying and I started getting used to getting these phone calls, and kind of blew them off at first, because, you know, you're pretty close to your neighbors in this historic district. There's just, you're just super close. But you go over there and work, and it was one night I was studying and it was, you know, late, and he called and he's like, I heard somebody sneeze. And I just can't remember laughing, because, you know, Okay. I'm like, well, we're like so close. You could reach, you could pass a cup of sugar from one window to the next. It's that close. And he's like, no, this was inside the house. And I think I was a little flippant, was like, well, maybe you should leave some of your allergy medicine there for the ghost. And it won't. And just being like joking. And he's like, ha ha, you know, kind of sarcastically ha ha in me. And, you know, I didn't think anything of it. And then it was another night. It was the same thing. He was over there. And he was like, someone said, hey, like they're in this house. And I'm telling you, we're so close. He's like, it's this neighborhood. You know, it shuts down like after 11 because there's a lot older people there too. And it's just, it's a very quiet little, even though it's like right on the edge of the city, it's very quiet there. And so he's like, no, this is inside. I'm telling you, it's inside the house. And it was just little things like that. But yeah. At first, I blew it off because I'm the one that has these kinds of things. I had not really talked to him yet about this. And I'm like, you know, it's nothing.
Yeah, because you guys were kind of brushing us off at the beginning. You were kind of like, no, it's fine. And like so many people do that too, right? Where they're just, you know, these little things that you're not really equating to something that might add up because there's spaces often between these events. So the stuff that you're not, you know, lining up in your head are just, yeah. So no, I'm totally, it's relatable.
Yes. It started, again, like you said, it started out so few and far between and a little benign at first. I didn't even think anything of it. There was no real connection with anything that was going on specifically until we moved it, like actually moved in. But I did have one time I was painting upstairs and had the radio playing, and you know, at this time, you know, I had one that was plugged into the wall. I'm sure my kids would think it's quite archaic, you know, now with Bluetooth, all that kind of stuff. But I had it plugged into the wall, and just like it stopped, and turned around and looked, and there's the plug, like laying by the radio, just out of the socket. Like, well, that's weird. And I'm like, okay, this is just loose plugs, old plugs, you know, in old homes. All these needed, you know, were probably going to have to be replaced. And that happened a couple of times while I was on the ladder. And again, I'm thinking, I'm pressing little prongs together, you know, trying to make it where it'll stay in the plug more. And it turns out later that was bad wiring. So it's, again, but, you know, not putting these together until we really had moved in with the kids. And that's when everything really started up.
But this I think is so key because this was like the first incident where there was a correlation between something that was happening and a danger in the house. Like, you know, later on you found out bad wiring, don't plug stuff in, like that's got to be replaced. And this is like, to me, the catalyst of what was to come because this became not only a pattern, but like a lead up to something to me that was like a life changer, a really big life changer event. So at this point, you were like, you started to look into the history of this house and you found out about a guy who lived there by the name of Sophie. Can you tell us a little bit about Sophie?
Well, when we saw the, you know, the carvings, things like that, the handprints, I had to find out. I mean, I'm just one of those people and I love history and we had great neighbors and they would tell me things. And I had a lady, I was actually a hairstylist with like time. I don't know, that's a jump there. Hairstylist going to law school, but you know, it happens. And I saw her every week. And one day she just looks at me and she smiles and she said, I know something that you don't know. And I'm like, what is that? And she said, I used to roller skate when I was a kid in the basement of the house you live in. She really was the one who starts telling me all of the things about, you know, as they called him, Sophie, that he was just this great guy. Like at a time, I guess, you know, in the 1950s, it's not, you know, things were a lot different then. You know, now it's like that dad's really hands-on, that's all cool, everything like that. But I think there was a different, you know, like the Mad Men era where it was a little bit different. Mm-hmm. It was women stereotypically that were the nurturers here. And it was like, he was like, you know, the opposite. They were very hands-on parents. He loved his children. He was a gardener. He loved doing things around the house. He was constantly, you know, fixing things or improving things in the house. And I think that also is important to note when things started happening too, when we would remodel. you know, it's almost like, it's like we had a seal of approval on this.
We
would do, you know, my husband would complete a repair. We would finish painting something and we would always find something and it would be placed like out on the open. One time it was like a marble just sitting on the counter. And was always weird about the kids having marbles. They didn't have marbles. So here's this marble sitting on there. Then it was a little tiny doll at one time. So we found like little, that started happening. We started calling them house presents. And at that time, I think we were kind of getting into this. Okay, something going on here. But yes, by all accounts, everything you heard about him was so positive. And they were just a happy family that lived there. But interestingly enough, a family with two children, just like us.
Yeah. Well, it's so much connection. Like, that's what I love about this. And August comes along, you guys move in. And at this point, like you say, stuff starts going on, but stuff starts happening that you guys felt was directly related to looking after the kids as well. Like your daughter got sick at one point, and it even got to the point where your son's life was saved. But let's talk about your daughter, because this is This relationship that you guys developed with this entity is just absolutely phenomenal.
Once we pulled the carpet out of the house, there was a sunken living room, and above that was the second floor. And so we would hear, it would sound like footsteps, and I thought it was our daughter because she was the littlest one, and she was the hardest one to get to go to bed. So it would sound like the little kid running upstairs. I'm like, okay, I'm going to go up there. Gonna find out why we're up, you know, this time. And the first time that I noticed a correlation, heard it, went upstairs, and I look, and both of the kids' doors were shut. And walk into, like, you know, just as I will do, just open the door, stick my head in, and she looks and she's like, I'm gonna be sick. And well, she got sick. And I'm like, well, that was odd, you know, and I can get her settled back down and stuff like that, you know, go back downstairs. And we started noticing a pattern that, you know, if you heard those footsteps, but it would happen infrequently enough. We nicknamed this entity Sophie after the man that lived there because it seemed like it was, you know, looking out for everybody. And that's what we had heard. But with my son, he loved to rap himself up at night. He was like all into things about mummies and things like that, and he was really meticulous about these things when he was a little fella. So one night we hear, you know, the footsteps upstairs, go upstairs, and I mean, it was immediately, as soon as they hear him, it's just like this overwhelming feeling, go now, something is wrong, something is bad, go up there. And daughter's fine, and go to my son's room. And I was literally horrified. I opened the door and he had fallen, like he was right there about to fall off the edge of the bed, but he had wrapped himself up in the sheet so much that it was a pretty high bed. Had he fallen, that sheet would have caught him and strangled him.
Wow.
And yeah, it scared me. And I had another time with both of them. They had a big backyard to play in, and that's where we're supposed to play. And I had to, I told them, stay in the backyard because they kept wanting to kick a ball in the front yard. Absolutely stay out the back until I can go out with you. And I was in the bathroom and hear footsteps, but instead of them being upstairs, this was downstairs this time. And the door kind of pushes in, and the little half bath downstairs. Again, I'm thinking it's one of the kids coming. I'm like, I'll be out in just a second. Turn around. There's no one there. And it's an immediate feeling of, oh my God. And it's like, I glanced to the side because we had a big den. You could see out to the backyard. I glanced to the side, could not see them. And I knew they were in the front yard, and went outside just in enough time to see my son kick the ball and it go rolling into the street. And my daughter turned towards the road, and I yelled immediately, no. And you saw people would come around this street fast, sometimes during the day. Almost immediately a car at the end of that street ended up hitting the ball.
Jeez.
So very, very rattled. Sophie's looking out for the kids. I mean, it was just one of those things. I just knew.
You can sort of chalk stuff up, like, you know, at the beginning, it's like, well, you know, maybe it just happened at the same time, but it's incident after incident after incident that, you know, that you are being alerted to. And I think that feeling you had too, that to me makes me wonder if that was even, whether that was your intuition or whether that was something being projected. You know what I mean? Like this is an emergency, you need to go. You know, with there's so many dynamics here that are really, really interesting, but it's undeniable. And you guys weren't the only witnesses. There was a housekeeper that you guys had as well that also witnessed this going on.
That one did make me laugh because I had not said anything. I mean, you know, it's kind of funny talking to people about these kinds of things. We were the only ones that had any kind of interaction. Yeah, my husband and I had too. And a friend of mine was starting a cleaning business and was wanting to take on a few houses and asked if I needed some help. And, you know, I was glad to have her there because that way we got to visit anyway. And I was working at that time. The kids were in school and I came home and she's just on the front porch looking at me, just exasperatedly looking at me. So she's like, have you guys ever had anything go on in this house? Or, you know, just like, you know, you're not alone in this house. And I laughed to just kind of one of those dry chuckles when, you know, you're about to have a conversation, an interesting conversation about something that you're expecting to have this conversation. And I was like, yeah, we've gathered that. And she came back inside and she said that she was actually cleaning in the living room. And she thought that it was my husband that had come home because she knew him too. And she thought he'd just come home early during the day. She said it sounded just like the front door open, like the screen door open.
It shut behind him.
And she said she heard, hello. And she said the first thing she said was, well, hey, Joseph, how are you? Did you have a good day? And she said she just realized that she just rattles on for a minute. She's like, she hadn't gotten any kind of response. And she walked out into the foyer where the front door was at and looked around. There's nobody there. And the door's still locked. And then it hits her. I locked the door from the inside because, you know, we would both have a key and it's still locked. She went to the side. She looked all over. And oddly enough, when she realized there was no one there, said it startled her, but she didn't feel like afraid.
Yeah.
And so she had this funny thing. And I told her what had been going on. We sat down, you know, over, you know, I had like a cup of tea and we're talking about these things, about what has been going on. And she said, you know, I felt this way when I came in. There was, you know, I wasn't here by myself, but that's the first time. But she was really funny because every time from that point on when she'd come in the house, she'd be like, okay, Sophie, I'm here to do my job. I'm going to clean and I appreciate if you would not startle me today. Or it was something funny that she would always say. And we would laugh. It was just like, you know, just routine. She would always say something.
I love that point about this because I get a question a lot from via email and whatever, where people say, okay, this happened to me. How do I know whether this was a good or a bad thing? And I think you or your housekeeper just hit the nail on the head where she's examining how does this feel? How does this feel? Apart from the, oh my gosh, I was startled. That's hard to get away from. How does this feel? And coming back to that, because there is a feeling of, you know, whether that be intention, whether that be, you know, whatever it is, there's a feeling behind this stuff that happens. And I'm one of these people, I believe, and Mike, I think you're this way too, and so, Crystal, you as well, is that we kind of know the truth when we feel it. If something's off, it's off. And if something is, you know, feels okay, then it's, you know, we kind of can gauge that. And I think we've kind of lost that ability to figure out, you know, is this good? Is this bad? Well, maybe I got to ask an expert. You don't have to ask an expert. You just have to gauge within yourself. How did this feel?
Yes. And I think that's very important because I think sometimes, and I know you and I've talked about it, people can scare themselves silly.
You bet.
Yeah.
As my grandmother would say, scare themselves silly. You know, you can have this go on and go, oh my gosh, it's a haunted house. This is terrible. And it was never that way. I mean, I really think from my past experiences, this is why it was just like you say, it was gauging this spewing it. Never, nothing. The only, and we'll get to that in a minute, the only time I have ever, we ever felt terrified in that home was for a human interaction. It had nothing to do with an entity or with the entity or with our Sophie or, you know.
Yeah. And this, you've got to talk about this. This was, I think, the climax of this house. And it really, again, I think there is no more clearer demonstration of the spirit of this house in so many ways than this story.
I'm going to preface this and say, guys, you could bring a marching band through a bedroom and he would sleep through it. Oddly enough, when this happened, for him to be awoken with me doing something downstairs, at that time, all the bedrooms were on an upper floor. I had finals. I realized I had left, you know, a book. It was like syllabus, my computer. I'd like left this outside. And we're talking, probably, I'm pulling it all nighter. This is probably 2-ish, 3-ish, you know.
You were in law school at the time.
Yes. And okay. It was crazy. So I had nights, I'd pull all nighter studying and I had finals coming in. That's what I was doing. Well, I needed my keys and I'm a creature of habit. If I come in, my keys go one place and they still do. It's funny. It doesn't matter where we've lived past this point. These will be the same spot. You know, that's just it. And so they were always on the counter or the kitchen. Always. And my husband's the same way. He'll put his keys, same space, counter on the kitchen. That's the first place I went to. There's no keys when I went. I thought, well, maybe I'm just tired and I stuck them in my bag or something, you know. Went and looked in my bag, no keys. And my husband had been upstairs asleep for hours at this point. And so I was looking all through the living room, everywhere I could possibly think. There are no keys, none whatsoever. And so anyway, he came down the stairs and was not very happy because, you know, here it is almost 3 a.m. and I'm rummaging around, and it startled me that he came down the stairs because he does not wake up. He's like, "What are you doing? You're keeping me up." I'm like, "I'm keeping you up." I'm like, yeah. "I lost my keys." And he said, "Did you check your bag?" I'm like, "Yeah, they're not there." And he started looking with me, and he even went upstairs and looked. And he is really methodical about looking, you know, for these kinds of things. He's like, "Well, they're not upstairs." And I'm like, "We're not downstairs." He's like, "Well, they have to be." And so, you know, of course, we'll start going looking the other places I've already supposed to look. And he's like, "Well, look, they've got to turn up." And he had walked out of the kitchen because we had a door that went outside to a carport. And that's where this took place. And he walked out of the kitchen. I'd gone back into the living room, was checking my bag probably 1,000th time. And we had 2 dogs and they started barking. And my husband came over and just say, "Well, now it's the dogs." And I'm still in my head thinking, this is weird that he's even up. Why is he up? And the next thing I hear is he hits on the glass of the door. And then we had like a handgun, like that was in the, was hidden in, like he went and got it and ran outside. I didn't know what had happened at this point. And I'm like, "Oh my gosh, first thing I do, I call 911 or I told him I'm like." And I saw a guy running out right ahead of him under the streetlight when I got on my phone call. And I'm like,
someone was trying to break in.
Yeah, someone.
Yeah.
He had caught someone in the process of breaking in the house. And so the cops got there. We filed the report. And he actually circled back around and was okay because, yeah, scared me half to death. But my husband did. And so they come and they file their report about the guys. Jason told them what he had seen. And so after we had filed the police report, we walked back in and Jason's like, "I'm going to bed. I don't know where he's going, but I'm going to bed." And I'm like, "At this point, I can't find him either. Whatever, I'm going." And we went upstairs together and there were keys right in the middle of the bed. Right? Bam. And it was like looking at each other.
Oh,
and at that point, it was like, we knew. We had been, you know, we knew where those keys had been and where they were not. And middle of the bed was not. And for him to be, you know, awoken And he said he just never could settle in that night. It was just, mm-hmm. there was constant pop, creak, something that night. There was just something. And I do believe, like I said, it was Sophie, because that was always our go-to at that point. Mm-hmm. And at that point, he was like, yeah, there's something here. There is absolutely something here.
Well, and I mean, had you have had your keys hanging on, you know, hang in that spot where you normally have them, you would have walked right into this guy. You would have walked out the door and walked right into this guy. And I mean,
absolutely. And that was, I get chill bumps thinking about it. And I'll tell you another interesting thing about it, because we really felt like it was very protective over our family. But I really think, I mean, yes, us, but our kids as well, because our kids had no clue that we even, like, now they're young adults. And when we started talking about it, it's like, what? What? And I'm like, you know, I think that's another aspect. It might have scared them. They're young. They didn't really know they never knew. They just, it's still, that's one of our fate. Like, when we look back and think about that house, you know, we absolutely have just the best memories. And oddly enough, it's bought and sold numerous times, but never like a family after us. It was, you know, that had small children. So I told my husband the other night, because it had recently sold again, I said, I hope whoever moves their house, you know, has a family, because I really feel like this house wants a family. You know, Sophie needs a family.
It's just the best story. See, Mike, I told you.
Yep. It's pretty cool.
It's a good one. It's a good one. And eventually, like you were saying, you guys moved out and whatnot. But this must have been, I can't imagine, like, it must have been a really emotional process walking away from that place.
It was. I cried. I absolutely cried. I just knew. It just felt like this, you know, Sophie, this entity, it belonged with the house. Because I, you know, I'm sure if someone walked in on this, I'd have been like, okay, she has officially lost. But I'm like, I wish you could come with us, but I know you belong here. And, you know.
Yeah.
I remember one of my favorite books, To Kill a Mockingbird, the scene where when Scout and Jim were saved by Boo Radley, and when Agnes says, thank you for my children, my last time in that kitchen. I was like, thank you. Thank you, Sophie, for my children.
Ugh. Now I'm going
to
tear up.
It was time to move on. I was having some issue, and we just knew it was our time. And we knew leading up to it. It's like it was just a feeling. But
yeah,
it's also that feeling in the house changed. Like, it was very bittersweet in the house. I mean, that sounds crazy, but there was such a liveliness about that home and about that place. And it's like no other. And I think I could still walk into the front door of that house and feel like I was walking back into the home of an old friend, or, you know, as you would a beloved relative, or someplace that you genuinely felt loved and at home.
Yeah. I really think that it's such a testament to what this spiritual paranormal activity is supposed to be like when you're in alignment, when you're not kind of bleeding emotional wounds everywhere, and that connection to non-physical, it's always there. We are not alone. We are just not alone. And no matter what people want to call it, there is that infinite intelligence is so strong and it's so powerful. And when you get into these places that are just so rich with this non-physical energy, I think this is such a beautiful example as to what this connection can look like.
But I think sometimes the way you walk into a place, anything new is different, and it can be scary. And mm-hmm. I think if there is something already there, I think it's really the how you walk into it and how you treat these things. Mm-hmm. Because I can just remember that being a time of, you know, immense, you know, joy there in the house. I joke, my husband halfway proposed to me in that house too. So there were a lot of happy, like really happy, happy memories there, and there was happiness when we moved in, that excitement. And I think a lot of the times that really can, you know, speak to how your experience goes as well.
Oh, definitely. Some of my best experiences with the paranormal have come after an insanely good laugh session.
Yeah.
Like, just hardcore laugh session. And I know when Steph and I, even when we were, you know, actively going to be doing field research and stuff like that, we learned really fast that if we went into a place and we were all, you know, stoic researchers and whatever, nothing would happen. Nothing. But if we went in and we had fun and we laughed and we joked, we would have activity up one side and down the other all night or all day. And absolutely. And then you begin resonating on the frequency with these things, you know, and it's like, you're just, it's like an explosion of joy and amazing stuff happens. And it's so cool. I know, like, Mike, you've had experiences that way too.
Oh, totally. Yeah. I write about it in my book. I was especially moved by the first episode we ever did, the Philip experiment. And that was how that group became successful. They were stoic and that kind of thing for the first year. And then they decided, you know what, after reading a few other cases, why don't we lighten things up? And so they started singing songs and telling jokes to each other. And then all of a sudden, you know, within three or four sessions, this stuff started to happen in a big way.
Yeah. And it does. It just plays out like this, you know, over and over again. And it just goes to show that, I'm one of these people, I really believe that our core state of being is joy. And that's our natural state of being is joy. And I think when we resonate with that, we resonate with the natural state of being of the world, of, you know, that non-physical energy and what we're, you know, come from and return to. And it's like, yeah, you bring that light into a space and it's just phenomenal what ends up coming of it. And oftentimes the people that, you know, move from, say, for example, like a regular house into something that's been haunted in a negative way, they don't even resonate anymore with the negative stuff. And they're not even sitting at the same frequency. They never experience it. And it's like, it's so powerful, this, you know, where we are and our emotions and what we can connect with. But I think your story is just, it really goes to show that it's not just a one-way street, that they want that connection too.
Mm-hmm. They do, because if you think about it, the people you're drawn to, it's not because they're just, you know, completely serious, you know.
Yeah.
The old saying goes, a stick in the mud, you know.
Yeah.
But I absolutely believe it does. And it's interesting you brought that up about the whole, how people will go in from a negative place and then you'll have owners saying, oh, well, I've never had the same thing that these people have. And you and I've talked about that a lot too, about frequency. Because you explained it one time, I thought, so well, as like a radio frequency.
Yeah.
You have the best example for that, for what I'm trying, you know.
Yeah, yeah. The example I was given in my classes and my live shows is that, you know, our emotions are kind of like a radio dial. And, you know, you've got, so the AM, FM frequencies, and you can't get the, you know, 99.5 FM if you're listening to 880 AM.
Yeah.
And you really have to tune that dial. And tuning that dial is your own emotional center. And that your kind of general state of being, you got to tune to that right emotion. And when you tune to that, you know, pure positive energy emotion, with, you know, and just cleaning up your emotional well-being and you know, meditation and stuff like that, then you end up resonating with all of the things that reflect that frequency, reflect that state of being. And you kind of get all of this stuff mirrored back to you. And in the same token, if you're, you know, sitting in that, you know, that sort of negative end where you're kind of angry all the time, or you're kind of bitter and you've just, you know, or whatever it is, frustrated with life, you resonate with that. And I think so many people think, well, you know, nothing ever happens to me. This is ridiculous. You know, this is stupid, blah, blah, blah. Well, yeah, if you've got that attitude, where are you resonating? What are you drawing to you? It's going to be a mirror of that. And I've seen this over and over and over again within my life and with, you know, clients and other people and whatever. And I'm a firm believer that that's the case.
Yes, I am too. Yes. But I loved your example of that. I've used that, and probably if not your me trying to explain it to somebody. And if you heard me trying to explain it that way, be like, I did not say it like that. It's like this. It's, you know. That's the fun thing about us being, you know, chosen sisters. We have some really funny conversations.
Exactly. Well, Crystal, this has been amazing. And I'm so glad that you were able to join us today. This has been phenomenal. And thank you for, like, you know, opening up your home essentially to us and letting us in with this story, because it's, I hope everybody that's listening can really walk away feeling on cloud nine about this, because it's so cool.
Well, thank you so much. Thanks for inviting me to share my story. And then it's great to meet you. Well, Zoom meet you, Mike.
Virtually, yeah.
Yeah, there we go.
Hopefully you'll come back again to tell us some more stories, because I bet you have way more.
Yeah, I hope so. If Morgan will have me, but
always. Your stories are amazing, and you're a wealth of information always. And it's, you are welcome back anytime, dude.
Well, thank you so much.
This is a really interesting case for me, because like you say, it's about perception. You could have been terrified by all the things that were happening in that home, but the way Crystal and her family perceived it, that these things were really not something to be afraid of, but to be embraced.
Yeah, absolutely. And embraced, I think, is the key word here. Instead of pushing upstream of, when they moved in and stuff started happening, mm-hmm. instead of pushing upstream, they really leaned into what was going on. And instead of becoming fearful, they checked in with themselves as to what exactly was going on here. Is this something that is inherently negative, or am I telling myself a story that is causing me fear? And those are two very, very different things. You know, an event that's terrifying and frightening because there's a real danger there versus am I afraid because it's a story I'm telling myself about what's going on. And they embraced it. They felt that they were, being comforted, that they weren't alone in the best possible way. And they leaned into it. And look what happened.
I've read a quote by Einstein that says, "The most important decision we make is whether we believe we live in a friendly or hostile universe."
Oh, that's good.
Do we live in a friendly universe or a hostile one? Because we get to choose. We get to choose our experience.
We get to choose. Yeah. There's always a choice.
Right. Things happen, but are they just opportunities? Rather than saying, this is a terrible thing, this is an opportunity to do something, to learn something, to find a new way to exist, to shed an old idea.
Yeah.
It's all about our perception. That is 100% what this conversation with Crystal was about.
Oh, I couldn't agree more. I couldn't agree more. I mean... Every time she tells me that story, I have goosebumps.
Yeah,
because it so resonates with me in terms of that I believe we do live in a friendly universe. I believe that the universe backs us up no matter what decision we make, whether it be a good or bad one. It will present us with the evidence of that decision. And I think you touched on it with that quote where that idea of if I decide that I'm living in a hostile world, there is no question the universe will back me up in presenting that.
Yeah.
And I've seen the complete opposite, where it's like, if, making this decision, this energy, this non-physical energy, no matter what you want to call it, that's got my back. I'm not alone. Mm. There is help. It will come. If I ask, it is given. That is what Crystal was experiencing as well. And it's so special.
Groovy. Well, thank you, dear listeners, for joining us on yet another eerie expedition.
And remember, the line between the natural and the supernatural is often a thin one. Until next time, stay curious, friends.
Supernatural Circumstances is a co-production of Entity Seeker Paranormal Research and Teachings and Good Egg Studios. This podcast is part of the Curious Cast podcast network. Theme music by Corey Johnson of Catalyst Records in Edmonton, Alberta. You can learn more about Morgan Knudsen at entityseeker.ca and learn more about me, Mike Brown, and listen to my show, Dark Poutine, at darkpoutine.com. Feel free to email the show at supernaturalcircumstances@gmail.com.